Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the MyLowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more. With volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's. We help. You save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
The Ballad of the White Horse. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, or to volunteer, visit LibriVox.org. Read by Joshua Christensen, July 2007. The Ballad of the White Horse by G.K. Chesterton. Prefatory Note and Dedication. Prefatory Note to the First Edition. This ballad needs no historical notes, for the simple reason that it does not profess to be historical. All of it that is not frankly fictitious, as in any prose romance about the past, is meant to emphasize tradition rather than history. King Alfred is not a legend in the sense that King Arthur may be a legend, that is, in the sense that he may possibly be a lie. But King Alfred is a legend in this broader and more human sense, that the legends are the most important things about him. The cult of Alfred was a popular cult, from the darkness of the 9th century to the deepening twilight of the 20th. It is wholly as a popular legend that I deal with him here. I write as one ignorant of everything, except that I have found the legend of a king of Wessex still alive in the land. I will give 3 curt cases of what I mean. A tradition connects the ultimate victory of Alfred with the valley in Berkshire called the Vale of the White Horse. I have seen doubts of the tradition, which may be valid doubts. I do not know when or where the story started. It is enough that it started somewhere and ended with me, for I only seek to write upon a hearsay, as the old balladists did. For the second case, there is a popular tale that Alfred played the harp and sang in the Danish camp. I select it because it is a popular tale, at whatever time it arose. For the third case, there is a popular tale that Alfred came in contact with a woman and cakes. I select it because it is a popular tale, because it is a vulgar one. It has been disputed by grave historians, who were, I think, a little too grave to be good judges of it. The 2 chief charges against the story are that it was first recorded long after Alfred's death, and that, as Mr. Oman urges, Alfred never really wandered all alone without any thanes or soldiers. Both these objections might possibly be met. It has taken us nearly as long to learn the whole truth about Byron, and perhaps longer to learn the whole truth about Pepys, than elapsed between Alfred and the first writing of such tales. As for the other objection, do the historians really think that Alfred after Wilton, or Napoleon after Leipzig, never walked about in a wood by himself for the matter of an hour or two? 10 minutes might be made sufficient for the essence of the story. But I am not concerned to prove the truth of these popular traditions. It is enough for me to maintain 2 things, that they are popular traditions, and that without these popular traditions we should have bothered about Alfred about as much as we bother about Edwig. 1 other consideration needs a note. Alfred has come down to us in the best way, that is by national legends, solely for the same reason as Arthur and Roland and the other giants of that darkness, because he fought for the Christian civilization against the heathen nihilism. But since this work was really done by generation after generation, by the Romans before they withdrew, and by the Britons while they remained, I have summarized this first crusade in a triple symbol, and given to a fictitious Roman, Celt, and Saxon a part in the glory of Ethandune. I fancy that, in fact, Alfred's Wessex was of very mixed bloods. But in any case, it is the chief value of legend to mix up the centuries while preserving the sentiment, to see all ages in a sort of splendid foreshortening. That is the use of tradition. It telescopes history. G.K.C. End of Prefatory Note. Dedication. To my wife. Of great limbs gone to chaos, a great face turned to night, why bend above a shapeless shroud, seeking in such archaic cloud sight of strong lords and light? Where seven sunken Englands lie buried one by one, why should one idle spade, I wonder, shake up the dust of thanes like thunder, to smoke and choke the sun? In cloud of clay so cast to heaven, what shape shall man discern? These lords may light the mystery of mastery or victory, and these ride high in history, but these shall not return. Gored on the Norman Gonfalon, the golden dragon died. We shall not wake with ballad strings the good time of the smaller things. We shall not see the holy kings ride down by Severn side. Stiff, strange, and quaintly coloured as the broidery of Bayeux, the England of that dawn remains, and this of Alfred and the Danes seems like the tales a whole tribe feigns, too English to be true. Of a good king on an island that ruled once on a time, and as he walked by an apple tree, there came green devils out of the sea, with sea-plants trailing heavily and tracks of opal slime. Yet Alfred is no fairy tale. His days as our days ran. He also looked forth for an hour on peopled plains and skies that lower from those few windows in the tower that is the head of a man. But who shall look from Alfred's hood or breathe his breath alive? His century, like a small dark cloud, drifts far. It is an eyeless crowd where the tortured trumpets scream aloud and the dense arrows drive. Lady, by one light only, we look from Alfred's eyes. We know he saw athwart the wreck the sign that hangs about your neck, where one more than Melchizedek is dead and never dies. Therefore I bring these rhymes to you who brought the cross to me, since on you flaming without flaw I saw the sign that Guthrum saw when he let break his ships of awe and laid peace on the sea. Do you remember when we went under a dragon moon, and mid volcanic tints of night walked where they fought the unknown fight, and saw black trees on the battle height, black thorn on Ethandune? And I thought, I will go with you, as man with God has gone, and wander with a wandering star, the wandering heart of things that are, the fiery cross of love and war that like yourself goes on. Oh, go you onward, where you are shall honour and laughter be, past purpled forest and pearled foam, God's winged pavilion free to roam, your face that is a wandering home, a flying home for me. Ride through the silent earthquake lands, wide as a waste is wide, across these days like deserts when pride and a little scratching pen have dried and split the hearts of men. Heart of the heroes, ride. Up through an empty house of stars, being what heart you are, up the inhuman steeps of space, as on a staircase go in grace, carrying the firelight on your face beyond the loneliest star. Take these, in memory of the hour we strayed a space from home, and saw the smoke-hued hamlets quaint with Westland king and Westland saint, and watched the western glory faint along the road to Frome. G.K.C. End of Dedication. The Ballad of the White Horse, Book 1. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, or to volunteer, visit LibriVox.org. Read by Joshua Christensen, August 2007. The Ballad of the White Horse by G. K. Chesterton. Book One. The Vision of the King. Before the gods that made the gods had seen their sunrise pass, the white horse of the White Horse Vale was cut out of the grass. Before the gods that made the gods had drunk at dawn their fill, the white horse of the White Horse Vale was hoary on the hill. Age beyond age on British lands, eons on eons gone, was peace and war in western hills, and the white horse looked on. For the white horse knew England, when there was none to know. He saw the first oar break or bend, he saw heaven fall and the world end, O God, how long ago! For the end of the world was long ago, and all we dwell today as children of some second birth, like a strange people left on earth after a judgment day. For the end of the world was long ago, when the ends of the world waxed free, when Rome was sunk in a waste of slaves, and the sun drowned in the sea. When Caesar's sun fell out of the sky, and whoso hearkened right could only hear the plunging of the nations in the night. When the ends of the earth came marching in to torch and cresset gleam, and the roads of the world that lead to Rome were filled with faces that moved like foam, like faces in a dream. And men rode out of the eastern lands, broad river and burning plain, trees that are Titan flowers to see, and tiger skies striped horribly with tints of tropic rain, where Inn's enameled peaks arise around that inmost one, where ancient eagles on its brink, vast as archangels, gather and drink the sacraments of the sun. And men break out of the northern lands, enormous lands alone, where a spell is laid upon life and lust, and the rain is changed to a silver dust, and the sea to a great green stone. And a shape that moveth murkily in mirrors of ice and night hath blanched with fear all beasts and birds, as death and a shock of evil words blast a man's hair with white. And the cry of the palms and the purple moons, or the cry of the frost and foam, swept ever around an inmost place, and the din of distant race on race cried and replied round Rome. And there was death on the emperor, and night upon the pope, and Alfred, hiding in deep grass, hardened his heart with hope. A sea folk, blinder than the sea, broke all about his land, but Alfred up against them bare, and gripped the ground and grasped the air, staggered and strove to stand. He bent them back with spear and spade, with desperate dike and wall, with foemen leaning on his shield, and roaring on him when he reeled, and no help came at all. He broke them with a broken sword a little towards the sea, and for 1 hour of panting peace, ringed with a roar that would not cease, with golden crown and girded fleece, made laws under a tree. The Northmen came about our land, a Christless chivalry, who knew not of the arch or pen, great, beautiful, half-witted men from the sunrise and the sea. Misshapen ships stood on the deep, full of strange gold and fire, and hairy men as huge as sin, with horned heads came wading in through the long low sea mire. Our towns were shaken of tall kings with scarlet beards like blood. The world turned empty where they trod. They took the kindly cross of God and cut it up for wood. Their souls were drifting as the sea, and all good towns and lands they only saw with heavy eyes and broke with heavy hands. Their gods were sadder than the sea, gods of a wandering will, who cried for blood like beasts at night, sadly from hill to hill. They seemed as trees walking the earth, as witless and as tall, yet they took hold upon the heavens, and no help came at all. They bred like birds in English woods, they rooted like the rose, when Alfred came to Athelney to hide him from their bows. There was not English armor left, nor any English thing, when Alfred came to Athelney to be an English king. For earthquake swallowing earthquake uprent the Wessex tree. The whirlpool of the pagan sway had swirled his sires as Styx away when a flood smites the sea. And the great kings of Wessex wearied and sank in gore, and even their ghosts in that great stress grew greyer and greyer, less and less, with the lords that died in Lyonesse and the king that comes no more. And the god of the golden dragon was dumb upon his throne, and the lord of the golden dragon ran in the woods alone. And if ever he climbed the crest of luck and set the flag before, returning as a wheel returns, came ruin and the rain that burns, and all began once more. And naught was left King Alfred but shameful tears of rage, in the island, in the river, in the end of all his age. In the island, in the river, he was broken to his knee, and he read, writ with an iron pen, that God had wearied of Wessex men, and given their country, field and fen, to the devils of the sea. And he saw in a tiny picture, tiny and far away, his mother sitting in Egbert's hall, and a book she showed him, very small, where a sapphire Mary sat in stall, with a golden Christ at play. It was wrought in the monk's slow manner, from silver and sanguine shell, where the scenes are little and terrible, keyholes of heaven and hell. In the river island of Athelney, with the river running past, in colours of such simple creed, all things sprang at him, sun and weed, till the grass grew to be grass indeed, and the tree was a tree at last. Fearfully plain the flowers grew, like the child's book to read, or like a friend's face seen in a glass, he looked, and there Our Lady was. She stood and stroked the tall live grass as a man strokes his steed. Her face was like an open word when brave men speak and choose. The very colours of her coat were better than good news. She spoke not, nor turned not, nor any sign she cast. Only she stood up, straight and free, between the flowers in Athelney and the river running past. One dim ancestral jewel hung on his ruined armour grey. He rent and cast it at her feet, where after centuries with slow feet men came from hall and school and street and found it where it lay. Mother of God, the wanderer said, I am but a common king, nor will I ask what saints may ask to see a secret thing. The gates of heaven are fearful gates, worse than the gates of hell, nor would I break the splendours barred, or seek to know the things they guard, which is too good to tell. But for this earth most pitiful, this little land I know, if that which is for ever is, or if our hearts should break with bliss, seeing the stranger go. When our last bow is broken, queen, and our last javelin cast, under some sad green evening sky, holding a ruined cross on high, under warm westland grass to lie, shall we come home at last? And a voice came, human, but high up, like a cottage climbed among the clouds, or a serf of hut and croft, that sits by his hovel fire as oft, but hears on his old bare roof aloft a belfry burst in song. The gates of heaven are lightly locked, we do not guard our gain. The heaviest hind may easily come silently and suddenly upon me in a lane, and any little maid that walks in good thoughts apart may break the guard of the three kings and see the dear and dreadful things I hid within my heart. The meanest man in grey fields gone behind the set of sun heareth between star and other star, through the door of the darkness fallen ajar, the counsel, eldest of things that are, the talk of the three in one. The gates of heaven are lightly locked, we do not guard our gold. Men may uproot where worlds begin, or read the name of the nameless sin, but if he fail, or if he win, to no good man is told. The men of the east may spell the stars, and times and triumphs mark, but the men signed of the cross of Christ go gaily in the dark. The men of the east may search the scrolls for sure fates and fame, but the men that drink the blood of God go singing to their shame. The wise men know what wicked things are written on the sky. They trim sad lamps, they touch sad strings, hearing the heavy purple wings, where the forgotten seraph kings still plot how God shall die. The wise men know all evil things under the twisted trees, where the perverse in pleasure pine, and men are weary of green wine, and sick of crimson seas. But you, and all the kind of Christ, are ignorant and brave, and you have wars you hardly win, and souls you hardly save. I tell you not for your comfort, yea, not for your desire, save that the sky grows darker yet, and the sea rises higher. Night shall be thrice night over you, and heaven an iron cope. Do you have joy without a cause? Yea, faith without hope? Even as she spoke, she was not, nor any word said he. He only heard, still as he stood, under the old knight's nodding hood, the sea-folk breaking down the wood, like a high tide from sea. He only heard the heathen men, whose eyes are blue and bleak, singing about some cruel thing done by a great and smiling king in daylight on a deck. He only heard the heathen men, whose eyes are blue and blind, singing what shameful things are done between the sunlit sea and the sun when the land is left behind. End of Book One. The Ballad of the White Horse, Book Two. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, or to volunteer, visit LibriVox.org. Read by Joshua Christensen, August 2007. The Ballad of the White Horse by G.K. Chesterton. Book Two, The Gathering of the Chiefs. Up across windy wastes and up went Alfred over the Shaws, shaken of the joy of giants, the joy without a cause. In the slopes away to the western bays, where blows not ever a tree, he washed his soul in the west wind and his body in the sea. And he set to rhyme his ale measures, and he sang aloud his laws, because of the joy of the giants, the joy without a cause. For the king went gathering Wessex men as grain out of the chaff, the few that were alive to die, laughing as littered skulls that lie, after lost battles turn to the sky an everlasting laugh. The king went gathering Christian men as wheat out of the husk, Eldred, the franklin by the sea, and Mark, the man from Italy, and Colan of the sacred tree from the old tribe on Usk. The rook croaked homeward heavily, the west was clear and warm, the smoke of evening food and ease rose like a blue tree in the trees when he came to Eldred's farm. But Eldred's farm was fallen awry, like an old cripple's bones, and Eldred's tools were red with rust, and on his well was a green crust, and purple thistles upward thrust between the kitchen stones. But smoke of some good feasting went upwards evermore, and Eldred's doors stood wide apart for loitering foot or labouring cart, and Eldred's great and foolish heart stood open like his door. A mighty man was Eldred, a bulk for casks to fill, his face a dreaming furnace, his body a walking hill. In the old wars of Wessex his sword had sunken deep, but all his friends, he sighed and said, were broken about Ethelred, and between the deep drink and the dead he had fallen upon sleep. "Come not to me, King Alfred, save always for the ale. Why should my harmless hinds be slain, because the chiefs cry once again, as in all fights, that we shall gain, and in all fights we fail? Your skalds still thunder and prophesy that crown that never comes. Friend, I will watch the certain things, swine and slow moons like silver rings, and the ripening of the plums." And Alfred answered, drinking, and gravely, without blame, "Nor bear I boast of skald or king, the thing I bear is a lesser thing, but comes in a better name. Out of the mouth of the Mother of God, more than the doors of doom, I call the muster of Wessex men, from grassy hamlet or ditch or den, to break and be broken, God knows when, but I have seen for whom. Out of the mouth of the Mother of God, like a little word come I, for I go gathering Christian men, from sunken paving and ford and fen, to die in a battle, God knows when, by God, but I know why. And this is the word of Mary, the word of the world's desire. No more of comfort shall ye get, save that the sky grows darker yet, and the sea rises higher. Then silence sank, and slowly arose the sea-land lord, like some vast beast for mystery, he filled the room and porch and sky, and from a cobwebbed nail on high, unhooked his heavy sword. Up on the shrill sea downs and up went Alfred all alone, turning but once ere the door was shut, shouting to Eldred over his butt that he bring all spears to the woodman's hut, hewn under Egbert's stone. And he turned his back and broke the fern and fought the moths of dusk, and went on his way for other friends, friends fallen of all the wide world's ends, from Rome that wrath and pardon sends, and the grey tribes on Usk. He saw gigantic tracks of death, and many a shape of doom, good steadings to grey ashes gone, and a monk's house white like a skeleton, in the grey crypt of the comb. And in many a Roman villa earth and her ivies eat, saw coloured pavements sink and fade in flowers, and the windy colonnade like the spectre of a street. But the cold stars clustered among the cold pines, ere he was half on his pilgrimage over the western lines. And the white dawn widened ere he came to the last pine, where Mark, the man from Italy, still made the Christian sign. The long farm lay on the large hillside, flat like a painted plan, and by the side the low white house, where dwelt the Southland man. A bronzed man, with a bird's bright eye, and a strong bird's beak and brow, his skin was brown like buried gold, and of certain of his sires was told that they came in the shining ship of old with Caesar in the prow. His fruit trees stood like soldiers, drilled in a straight line. His strange stiff olives did not fail, and all the kings of the earth drank ale, but he drank wine. Wide over wasted British plains stood never an arch or dome, only the trees to toss and reel, the tribes to bicker, the beasts to squeal, but the eyes in his head were strong like steel, and his soul remembered Rome. Then Alfred of the lonely spear lifted his lion head, and fronted with the Italian's eye, asking him of his whence and why, King Alfred stood and said, I am that oft-defeated king, whose failure fills the land, who fled before the Danes of old, who chaffered with the Danes with gold, who now upon the Wessex wold hardly has feet to stand. But out of the mouth of the Mother of God I have seen the truth like fire, this, that the sky grows darker yet, and the sea rises higher. Long looked the Roman on the land, the trees as golden crowns, blazed drenched with dawn and dew impearled, while faintlier coloured, freshlier curled, the clouds from underneath the world stood up over the downs. These vines be ropes that drag me hard, he said. I go not far. Where would you meet? For you must hold half Wiltshire and the White Horse Wold, and the Thames Bank to Owensfold, if Wessex goes to war. Guthrum sits strong on either bank, and you must press his lines inwards and eastward drive him down. I doubt if you shall take the crown till you have taken London town. For me, I have the vines. If each man on the judgment day meet God on a plain alone, said Alfred, I will speak for you, as for myself, and call it true, that you brought all fighting folk you knew lined under Egbert's stone. Though I be in the dust ere then, I know where you will be. And shouldering suddenly his spear, he faded like some elfin fear, where the tall pines ran up, tier on tier, tree over toppling tree. He shouldered his spear at morning, and laughed to lay it on, but he leaned on his spear as on a staff, with might and little mood to laugh, or ever he sighted chick or calf, of Colan of Caerleon. For the man dwelt in a lost land of boulders and broken men, in a great grey cave far off to south, where a thick green forest stopped the mouth, giving darkness in his den. And the man was come like a shadow from the shadow of druid trees, where Usk with mighty murmurings past Caerleon of the fallen kings goes out to ghostly seas. Last of a race in ruin, he spoke the speech of the Gaels. His kin were in holy Ireland, or up in the crags of Wales. But his soul stood with his mother's folk, that were of the rain-wrapped isle, where Patrick and Brandon Westerly looked out at last on a landless sea and the sun's last smile. His harp was carved and cunning, as the Celtic craftsman makes, graven all over with twisting shapes, like many headless snakes. His harp was carved and cunning, his sword prompt and sharp, and he was gay when he held the sword, sad when he held the harp. For the great Gaels of Ireland are the men that God made mad, for all their wars are merry, and all their songs are sad. He kept the Roman order, he made the Christian sign, but his eyes grew often blind and bright, and the sea that rose in the rocks at night rose to his head like wine. He made the sign of the cross of God, he knew the Roman prayer, but he had unreason in his heart, because of the gods that were. Even they that walked on the high cliffs, high as the clouds were then, gods of unbearable beauty that broke the hearts of men, and whether in seat or saddle, whether with frown or smile, whether at feast or fight was he heard the noise of a nameless sea on an undiscovered isle. Lifting the great green ivy, and the great spear lowering, one said, "I am Alfred of Wessex, and I am a conquered king." And the man of the cave made answer, and his eyes were stars of scorn, "And better kings were conquered, or ever your sires were born. What goddess was your mother, what fay your breed begot, that you should not die with Uther and Arthur and Lancelot? But when you win, you brag and blow, and when you lose, you rail. Army of Eastland yokels, not strong enough to fail." "I bring not boast or railing," spake Alfred, not in ire. "I bring of our lady a lesson set, this, that our sky grows darker yet, and the sea rises higher." Then Colan of the sacred tree tossed his black mane on high, and cried as rigidly he rose, "And if the sea and sky be foes, we will tame the sea and sky." Smiled Alfred, "Seek ye a fable more dizzy and more dread than all your mad barbarian tales where the sky stands on its head? A tale where a man looks down on the sky that has long looked down on him, a tale where a man can swallow a sea that might swallow the seraphim. Bring to the hut by Egbert's stone all bills and bows ye have." And Alfred strode off rapidly, and Colan of the sacred tree went slowly to his cave. End of Book Two. The Ballad of the White Horse, Book Three. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, or to volunteer, visit LibriVox.org. Read by Joshua Christensen, August 2007. The Ballad of the White Horse by G.K. Chesterton, Book Three. The Harp of Alfred. In a tree that yawned and twisted, the king's few goods were flung, a mass-book mildewed, line by line, and weapons and a skin of wine, and an old harp unstrung. By the yawning tree in the twilight, the king unbound his sword, severed the harp of all his goods, and there in the cool and soundless woods sounded a single chord. Then laughed, and watched the finches flash, the sullen flies in swarm, and went unarmed over the hills with a harp upon his arm. Until he came to the White Horse Vale, and saw across the plains, in the twilight high and far and fell, like the fiery terraces of hell, the campfires of the Danes, the fires of the great army that was made of iron men, whose lights of sacrilege and scorn ran around England red as morn, fires over Glastonbury thorn, fires out on Eli Finn. And as he went by White Horse Vale, he saw, lie wan and wide, the old horse graven, God knows when, by gods or beasts or what things then, walked a new world instead of men, and scrawled on the hillside. And when he came to White Horse Down, the great white horse was grey, for it was ill scoured of the weed, and lichen and thorn could crawl and feed, since the foes of settled house and creed had swept old works away. King Alfred gazed all sorrowful at thistle and mosses grey, till a rally of Danes with shield and bill rolled drunk over the dome of the hill, and hearing of his harp and skill, they dragged him to their play. And as they went through the high green grass, they roared like the great green sea, but when they came to the red campfire, they were silent suddenly. And as they went up the wastes away, they went reeling to and fro, but when they came to the red campfire, they stood all in a row. For golden in the firelight, with a smile carved on his lips, and a beard curled right cunningly, was Guthrum of the northern sea, the emperor of the ships. With three great earls King Guthrum went the rounds from fire to fire, with Harold, nephew of the king, and Ogier of the stone and sling, and Elf, whose gold lute had a string that sighed like all desire. The earls of the great army, that no men born could tire, whose flames anear him or aloof, to cold of towers or walls of proof, fire over Glastonbury roof, and out on Ely fire. And Guthrum heard the soldier's tale, and bade the stranger play, not harshly, but as one on high, on a marble pillar in the sky, who sees all folk that live and die, pygmy and far away. And Alfred, king of Wessex, looked on his conqueror, and his hands hardened, but he played, and leaving all later hates unsaid, he sang of some old British raid on the Wild West march of yore. He sang of war in the warm wet shires where rain nor fruitage fails, where England of the motley states deepens like a garden to the gates in the purple walls of Wales. He sang of the seas of savage heads and the seas and seas of spears, boiling all over Offa's dyke, what time a Wessex club could strike the kings of the mountaineers, till Harold laughed and snatched the harp, the kinsman of the king, a big youth, beardless like a child, whom the new wine of war sent wild, smote and began to sing. And he cried of the ships as eagles that circle fiercely and fly, and sweep the seas and strike the towns from Cyprus round to Skye. How swiftly and with peril they gather all good things, the high horns of the forest beasts, or the secret stones of kings. For Rome was given to rule the world, and gat of it little joy, but we shall enjoy the world, the whole huge world a toy, great wine like blood from Burgundy, cloaks like the clouds from Tyre, and marble like solid moonlight, and gold like frozen fire, smells that a man might swill in a cup, stones that a man might eat, and the great smooth women like ivory that the Turks sell in the street. He sang the throne of the thief of the world, and the gods that love the thief, and he yelled aloud at the cloister yards, where men go gathering grief. Well have you sung, O stranger, of death on the dyke in Wales. Your chief was a bracelet-giver, but the red unbroken river of a race runs not for ever, but suddenly it fails. Doubtless your sires were sword-swingers when they waded fresh from foam, before they were turned to women by the god of the nails from Rome. But since you bent to the shaven men who neither lust nor smite, thunder of Thor, we hunt you, a hare on the mountain height. King Guthrum smiled a little and said, It is enough. Nephew, let Elf retune the string. A boy must needs like bellowing, but the old ears of a careful king are glad of songs less rough. Blue-eyed was Elf the minstrel, with womanish hair and ring, yet heavy was his hand on sword, though light upon the string. And as he stirred the strings of the harp, to notes but four or five, the heart of each man moved in him like a babe buried alive. And they felt the land of the folk-songs spread southward of the Dane, and they heard the good Rhine flowing and the heart of all Alamein. They felt the land of the folk-songs where the gifts hang on the tree, where the girls give ale at morning and the tears come easily. The mighty people, womanlike, that have pleasure in their pain, as he sang of Balder beautiful, whom the heavens loved in vain. As he sang of Balder beautiful, whom the heavens could not save, till the world was like a sea of tears, and every soul a wave. There is always a thing forgotten, when all the world goes well, a thing forgotten as long ago, when the gods forgot the mistletoe, and soundless as an arrow of snow the arrow of anguish fell. The thing on the blind side of the heart, on the wrong side of the door, the green plant groweth, menacing, almighty lovers in the spring, there is always a forgotten thing, and love is not secure. And all that sat by the fire were sad, save Ogier, who was stern, and his eyes hardened even to stones as he took the harp in turn. Earl Ogier, of the stone and sling, was awed to ear and sight. Old he was, but his locks were red, and jests were all the words he said, yet he was sad at board and bed, and savage in the fight. You sing of the young gods easily in the days when you are young, but I go smelling you and sods, and I know there are gods behind the gods, gods that are best unsung. And a man grows ugly for women, and a man grows dull with ale, well, if he find in his soul at last fury, that does not fail. The wrath of the gods behind the gods, who would rend all gods and men. Well, if the old man's heart hath still wheels sped of rage and roaring will, like cataracts to break down and kill, well for the old man then. While there is one tall shrine to shake, or one live man to rend, for the wrath of the gods behind the gods, who are weary to make an end. There lives one moment for a man when the door at his shoulder shakes, when the taut rope parts under the pull, and the barest branch is beautiful, one moment while it breaks. So rides my soul upon the sea that drinks the howling ships, though in black jest it bows and nods, under the moons with silver rods, I know it is roaring at the gods, waiting the last eclipse. And in the last eclipse the sea shall stand up like a tower, above all moons made dark and riven, hold up its foaming head to heaven, and laugh, knowing its hour. And the high ones in the happy town, propped of the planet seven, shall know a new light in the mind, a noise about them and behind, shall hear an awful voice and find foam in the courts of heaven. And you that sit by the fire are young, and true loves wait for you. But the king and I grow old, and hate alone is true. And Guthrum shook his head, but smiled, for he was a mighty clerk, and had read lines in the Latin books when all the north was dark. He said, I am older than you, Ogier. Not all things would I rend, for whether life be bad or good, it is best to abide the end. He took the great harp wearily, even Guthrum of the Danes, with wide eyes bright as the one long day on the long polar plains. For he sang of a wheel returning, and the mire trod back to mire, and how red hells and golden heavens are castles in the fire. It is good to sit where the good tales go, to sit as our father sat, but the hour shall come after his youth, when a man shall know not tales but truth, and his heart fail thereat, when he shall read what is written, so plain in clouds and clods, when he shall hunger without hope, even for evil gods. For this is a heavy matter, and the truth is cold to tell. Do we not know, have we not heard, the soul is like a lost bird, the body a broken shell. And a man hopes, being ignorant, till in white woods apart, he finds at last the lost bird dead. And a man may still lift up his head, but never more his heart. There comes no noise but weeping out of the ancient sky, and a tear is in the tiniest flower, because the gods must die. The little brooks are very sweet, like a girl's ribbon curled, but the great sea is bitter that washes all the world. Strong are the Roman roses, or the free flowers of the heath, but every flower, like a flower of the sea, smelleth with the salt of death. And the heart of the locked battle is the happiest place for men, where shrieking souls as shafts go by, and many have died, and all may die, though this word be a mystery, death is most distant then. Death blazes bright above the cup, and clear above the crown, but in that dream of battle we seem to tread it down. Wherefore I am a great king, and waste the world in vain, because man hath not other power, save that in dealing death for dower he may forget it for an hour, to remember it again. And slowly his hands, and thoughtfully, fell from the lifted lyre, and the owls moaned from the mighty trees, till Alfred caught it to his knees, and smote it as in ire. He heaved the head of the harp on high, and swept the framework barred, and his stroke had all the rattle and spark of horses flying hard. When God put man in a garden, he girt him with a sword, and sent him forth a free knight that might betray his lord. He brake him, and betrayed him, and fast and far he fell, till you and I may stretch our necks and burn our beards in hell. But though I lie on the floor of the world with the seven sins for rods, I would rather fall with Adam than rise with all your gods. What have the strong gods given? Where have the glad gods led? When Guthrum sits on a hero's throne and asks if he is dead. Sirs, I am but a nameless man, a rhymester without home. Yet since I come of the Wessex clay and carry the cross of Rome, I will even answer the mighty earl that asked of Wessex men why they be meek and monkish folk and bow to the white lord's broken yoke. What sign have we save blood and smoke? Here is my answer then. That on you is fallen the shadow and not upon the name, that though we scatter and though we fly and you hang over us like the sky, you are more tired of victory than we are tired of shame. That though you hunt the Christian man like a hare on the hillside, the hare has still more heart to run than you have heart to ride. That though all lances split on you, all swords be heaved in vain, we have more lust again to lose than you to win again. Your lord sits high in the saddle, a broken-hearted king, but our King Alfred, lost from fame, fallen among foes or bonds of shame, in I know not what mean trade or name, has still some song to sing. Our monks go robed in rain and snow, but the heart of flame therein, but you go clothed in feasts and flames, when all is ice within. Nor shall all iron dooms make dumb men wondering ceaselessly if it be not better to fast for joy than feast for misery. Nor monkish order only slides down as fields to fen. All things achieved and chosen pass, as the white horse fades in the grass, no work of Christian men. Ere the sad gods that made your gods saw their sad sunrise pass, the white horse of the white horse vale that you have left to darken and fail was cut out of the grass. Therefore your end is on you, is on you and your kings, not for a fire in Ely Fen, not that your gods are 9 or 10, but because it is only Christian men guard even heathen things. For our God hath blessed creation, calling it good. I know what spirit with whom you blindly band hath blessed destruction with his hand. Yet by God's death the stars shall stand, and the small apples grow. And the king, with harp on shoulder, stood up and ceased his song, and the owls moaned from the mighty trees, and the Danes laughed loud and long. End of Book 3. The Ballad of the White Horse, Book 4. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, or to volunteer, visit LibriVox.org. Read by Joshua Christensen, October 2007. The Ballad of the White Horse by G.K. Chesterton. Book 4. The Woman in the Forest. Thick thunder of the snorting swine, enormous in the gloam, rending among all roots that cling, and the wild horses whinnying, were the night's noises when the king, shouldering his harp, went home. With eyes of owl and feet of fox, full of all thoughts he went. He marked the tilt of the pagan camp, the paling of pine, the sentry's tramp, and the one great stolen altar lamp over Guthrum in his tent. By scrub and thorn and Ethandune that night the foe had lain, whence ran across the heather grey the old stones of a Roman way, and in a wood not far away the pale road split in twain. He marked the wood and the cloven ways with an old captain's eyes, and he thought how many a time had he sought to see doom he could not see, how ruin had come, and victory, and both were a surprise. Even so had he watched and wondered under Ashdown from the plains, with Ethelred praying in his tent, till the white hawthorn swung and bent, as Alfred rushed his spears and rent the shield-wall of the Danes. Even so had he watched and wondered, knowing neither less nor more, till all his lords lay dying, and axes on axes plying, flung him and drove him flying like a pirate to the shore. Wise he had been before defeat, and wise before success, wise in both hours, and ignorant, knowing neither more nor less. As he went down to the river hut, he knew a nightshade scent. Owls did as evil cherubs rise, with little wings and lantern eyes, as though he sank through the underskies, but down and down he went. As he went down to the river hut, he went as one that fell, seeing the high forest domes and spars, dim green or torn with golden scars, as the proud look up at the evil stars in the red heavens of hell. For he must meet by the river hut them he had bidden to arm, Mark from the towers of Italy, and Colan of the sacred tree, and Eldred who beside the sea held heavily his farm. The roof leaned gaping to the grass as a monstrous mushroom lies. Echoing and empty seemed the place, but opened in a little space a great grey woman with scarred face and strong and humbled eyes. King Alfred was but a meagre man, bright-eyed but lean and pale, and swordless. With his harp and rags he seemed a beggar such as lags looking for crusts and ale. And the woman, with a woman's eyes of pity at once and ire, said, when that she had glared a span, "There is a cake for any man if he will watch the fire." And Alfred, bowing heavily, sat down the fire to stir, and even as the woman pitied him, so did he pity her, saying, "O great heart in the night, O best cast forth for worst, twilight shall melt and morning stir, and no kind thing shall come to her, till God shall turn the world over, and all the last are first. And well may God with the serving folk cast in his dreadful lot. Is not he too a servant, and is not he forgot? For was not God my gardener, and silent like a slave, that opened oaks on the uplands, or thicket in graveyard gave? And was not God my armourer, all patient and unpaid, that sealed my skull as a helmet, and ribs for hauberk made? Did not a great grey servant of all my sires and me build this pavilion of the pines, and herd the fowls and fill the vines, and labour and pass and leave no signs, save mercy and mystery? For God is a great servant, and rose before the day, from some primordial slumber torn, but all we living later born sleep on and rise after the morn, and the Lord has gone away. On things half sprung from sleeping, all sleepy suns have shone. They stretch stiff arms, the yawning trees, the beasts blink upon hands and knees, man is awake and does and sees, but heaven has done and gone. For who shall guess the good riddle, or speak of the holiest, save in faint figures and failing words, who loves, yet laughs among the swords, labours and is at rest? But some see God like Guthrum, crowned with a great beard curled, but I see God like a good giant, that labouring lifts the world. Wherefore was God in Golgotha, slain as a serf is slain, and hate he had of prince and peer, and love he had, and made good cheer, of them that, like this woman here, go powerfully in pain? But in this grey morn of man's life cometh sometime to the mind a little light that leaps and flies like a star blown on the wind. A star of nowhere, a nameless star, a light that spins and swirls, and cries that even in hedge and hill, even on earth it may go ill at last with the evil earls. A dancing sparkle, a doubtful star, on the waste wind whirled and driven, but it seems to sing of a wilder worth, a time discrowned of doom and birth, and the kingdom of the poor on earth come as it is in heaven. But even though such days endure, how shall it profit her, who shall go mourning to the grave, with many a meek and mighty slave, field-breaker and fisher on the wave, and woodman and wagoner? Bake ye the big world all again, a cake with kinder leaven, yet these are sorry evermore, unless there be a little door in heaven. And as he wept for the woman, he let her business be, and like his royal oath and rash, the good food fell upon the ash and blackened instantly. Screaming, the woman caught a cake yet burning from the bar, and struck him suddenly on the face, leaving a scarlet scar. King Alfred stood up wordless, a man dead with surprise, and torture stood, and the evil things that are in the childish hearts of kings an instant in his eyes. And even as he stood and stared, drew round him in the dusk those friends creeping from far-off farms, Marcus with all his slaves in arms, and the strange spears hung with ancient charms of Colan of the Usk. With one whole farm marching afoot, the trampled road resounds, farmhands and farm-beasts blundering by, and jars of mead and stores of rye, where Eldred strode above his high and thunder-throated hounds. And grey cattle and silver load against the unlifted morn, and straw clung to the spear-shafts tall, and a boy went before them all, blowing a ram's horn. As mocking such rude revelry, the dim clan of the Gael came like a bad king's burial end, with dismal robes that drop and rend, and demon pipes that wail, in long outlandish garments, torn, though of antique worth, with druid beards and druid spears, as a resurrected race appears out of an elder earth. And though the king had called them forth, and knew them for his own, so still each eye stood like a gem, so spectral hung each broidered hem, grey carven men, he fancied them, hewn in an age of stone. And the two wild peoples of the north stood fronting in the gloam, and heard and knew each in its mind the third great thunder on the wind, the living walls that hedge mankind, the walking walls of Rome. Marks were the mixed tribes of the west, of many a hue and strain, Girth, with rank hair like yellow grass, and the Cornish fisher, Gorlias, and Halmer come from his first mass, lately baptized, a Dane. But like one man in armour, those hundreds trod the field. From red Arabia to the Tyne, the earth had heard that marching line, since the cry on the hill Capitoline, and the fall of the golden shield. And the earth shook, and the king stood still under the greenwood bough, and the smoking cake lay at his feet, and the blow was on his brow. Then Alfred laughed out suddenly, like thunder in the spring, till shook aloud the lintel beams, and the squirrels stirred in dusty dreams, and the startled birds went up in streams for the laughter of the king. The giant laughter of Christian men that roars through a thousand tales, where greed is an ape, and pride is an ass, and Jack's away with his master's lass, and the miser is banged with all his brass, the farmer with all his flails. Tales that tumble, and tales that trick, yet end not all in scorning, of kings and clowns in a merry plight, and the clock gone wrong, and the world gone right, that the mummers sing upon Christmas night, and Christmas day in the morning. "Now here is a good warrant," cried Alfred, "by my sword, for he that is struck for an ill servant should be a kind lord. He that has been a servant knows more than priests and kings, but he that has been an ill servant, he knows all earthly things. Pride flings frail palaces at the sky, as a man flings up sand, but the firm feet of humility take hold of heavy land. Pride juggles with her toppling towers, they strike the sun and cease, but the firm feet of humility, they grip the ground like trees. He that hath failed in a little thing hath a sign upon his brow, and the earls of the great army have no such seal to show. The red print on my forehead small flame for a red star, in the van of the violent marching, then, when the sky is torn of the trumpets 10, and the hands of the happy howling men fling wide the gates of war. This blow that I return not, 10 times will I return, on kings and earls of all degree, and armies, wide as empires be, shall slide like landslips to the sea, if the red star burn. One man shall drive 100, as the dead kings drave. Before me rocking hosts be riven, and battering cohorts backward driven, for I am the first king known of heaven that has been struck like a slave. Up on the old white road, brothers, up on the Roman walls, for this is the night of the drawing of swords, and the tainted tower of the heathen hordes leans to our hammers, fires, and cords, leans a little and falls. Follow the star that lives and leaps, follow the sword that sings, for we go gathering heathen men, a terrible harvest, 10 by 10, as the wrath of the last red autumn, then, when Christ reaps down the kings. Follow a light that leaps and spins, follow the fire unfurled, for riseth up against realm and rod, a thing forgotten, a thing downtrod, the last lost giant, even God, is risen against the world. Roaring they went o'er the Roman wall, and roaring up the lane. Their torches tossed a ladder of fire, higher their hymn was heard, and higher, more sweet for hate and for heart's desire, and up in the northern scrub and briar they fell upon the Dane. End of Book 4.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply, in-app only.